ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 28th of April. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. A man has been charged with attempting to assassinate the US president following a security incident at an annual gala in Washington over the weekend. Donald Trump and most of his senior cabinet and staff were attending the White House Correspondents' Dinner when an armed man tried to get into the venue. Our America's editor, John Lyons, is at the federal court in Washington. He joined me earlier.
Well, Melissa, Cole Thomas Allen, 31, from California, has appeared in court here in Washington, D.C. He did not enter any pleas. He was charged with three offences. The first one was an attempt to assassinate the President of the United States. The second was using a firearm during a crime of violence. And the third was transportation of a firearm across state boundaries with the intent to commit a felony. The prosecution has made it clear, the Attorney General here, that the case will be that this individual came by train from California to Washington, D.C. with guns and knives, therefore didn't have to pass through any security. Amtrak, the major American train network, doesn't require security. And so that's become a big issue here in America following what happened at the White House Correspondents' Ball. But Cole Thomas Allen, as I say, appeared in court and entered no plea. The judge asked him if he understood his rights, the right to remain silent and the right to a preliminary hearing. And Allen at that point said, "Yes, Your Honor." And then the judge asked him what was his level of education, and he replied, master's degree.
We've also heard from the White House today. It seems that recriminations have begun.
That's right. It was inevitable that this would become a major political issue. Caroline Leavitt, the spokesperson for President Trump, has said that she has apportioned some of the blame for the attempted attack the other night on some commentators, Democrats, and some in the media, who she says for 11 years have legitimized violence and brought America to this dark moment. Let's have a listen to what she said.
"This hateful and constant and violent rhetoric directed at President Trump day after day after day for 11 years has helped to legitimize this violence and bring us to this dark moment."
So that's the White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt there. And John, the White House seems particularly upset by a joke by late night host Jimmy Kimmel. Can you talk me through this?
Well, the culture wars here are deepening by the day following the incident the other night at the White House Correspondents Association, but generally. And one of the Trump administration's main targets now is Jimmy Kimmel. He's a late night comedian. He has his own show on the American ABC network. And he was taken off air a few months ago under pressure from the Trump administration. The ABC network got a huge backlash, cancellations, they suffered financially, and so they brought him back on, and he's come back more emboldened than ever. His view is that he's come back from death, that he was taken off air, he's now back, and he spares nobody now in his late night show. And he, the other night, he was making a reference to Melania, the First Lady, and he said that she had a glow like an expectant widow. Not surprisingly, that hasn't humoured or gone down well with the White House, including Melania, who is now basically saying that ABC Network should take him off air permanently. So we've got a major power struggle between the White House and one of America's major television networks yet again.
John Lyons in Washington there. With the Strait of Hormuz still closed and global fuel supplies constrained, the federal opposition is calling on the Australian government to double the nation's fuel reserves. It's unveiling a new policy today, which would spend $800 million helping fuel suppliers construct extra storage and buy more fuel. And the coalition wants the government to adopt the plan. Matt Canavan is the Nationals leader and Shadow Minister for Trade. Matt Canavan, thanks for joining AM this morning.
Great to be with you, Melissa.
So can you take me through how this plan will work to build up fuel reserves to 60 days of supplies?
Well, we'll just build on a successful program that Angus Taylor and the Liberal National Party put in place when we were last in government. We passed legislation to establish what's called the minimum stockholding obligation, which means that the two refineries we have left, as well as around eight other importers and distributors, are obligated to store 30 days of fuel use. Now, that was quite controversial at the time. The industry did not support it. There was a lot of opposition. They thought it would cost too much. But in the end, it worked really well, and it's what's seeing us through this crisis. So given it had worked, it has worked. Given the extra risks we clearly face with the geopolitical tension rising in our region, we think it's sensible here now to double that, to double it to 60 days, to give us 2 months of breathing room. It's a reasonable cost. It's practical, can be achievable within a few years. And as I say, despite the opposition at the time, it's worked very well.
And can you explain how the $800 million figure is arrived at? How does that work?
Well, to meet this obligation, we'll need something like 4.4 billion litres of extra storage. Some of that will be met by latent capacity systems. Some of it will be met by the private sector investing, as they did under the previous obligation. But we also recognise this extra amount of storage is a big cost for the industry. So we're suggesting that $800 million from Export Finance Australia, which is a government bank effectively, be used to help the private sector fund this. These would be loans that have to be paid back, but it would just help with the financing program. So it wouldn't fund the entire amount of that extra storage, but it would help make a contribution, help ease the transition here over a few years. And look, we want to be fully transparent about this. Obviously, this comes at a cost. We've gone through in great detail with the previous regulation impact statements on this, previous freedom of information requests that showed that this extra storage would probably add about a cent a litre to people's fuel. So, look, that is an extra cost. We recognise that. But given what we're facing right now, we think it's a reasonable insurance premium to improve the security of all Australians.
You would be well aware that the amount of fuel we have reserved here in Australia has long been a subject of political debate, and successive governments have estimated that increasing significantly the stock holdings here would cost tens of billions of dollars. I mean, that was a figure that has been bandied about by the government today, but also by the previous coalition government when Labor in opposition had suggested expanding stock holdings to 90 days. The estimates have always been around $10 to $20 billion. So why the big difference between costs that have been put forward when parties of any side have been in government saying it's tens of billions, but now in opposition you're saying this could be done for just $800 million worth of concessional loans?
Just as I said before, sorry, Melissa, that $800 million is only a contribution. It's not the total cost. We estimate that the total cost would be around $6 billion, along with both the storage, extra storage costs, and the cost of actually filling the storage and maintaining that. And so the public contribution or the public finance would just help ease that. As I say, I'll be fully transparent, that extra cost, that extra $6 billion cost, but has to add about a cent a litre. Now, to get to the 90 days, the issue there and why you get into the tens of billions, not the $6 billion, is it's not linear. You start to get a lot harder to get to up to that 90 days, at least on the previous cost estimates. And again, that's why we think this measure is a reasonable one that is affordable. Being fully upfront, this does come at extra costs. It was sensible to do a few years ago to get to 30 days. It's helping us now. Given the high risks, it's even more sensible to go to 60 days. And I hope the government can consider this because they seem to be a bit all over the shop at the moment, the Labor Party. Do they want a new refinery? They don't. We also want to see new refineries. It's another thing we're announcing today. And I hope the government gets on board and supports enhanced fuel security for all Australians.
So was it a mistake when the coalition was in government and the level of fuel supplies were being raised by the then Labor opposition not to take the sort of measure that you're proposing now?
Well, we did. As I said, we put in place a 30 days measure. And look, we can go back and say it should have been 60, 70, 40, whatever. But as I said at the time, that came with great opposition. We had to balance that opposition with the risks that then the country faced. And I mean, thank God Angus Taylor did that. I mean, imagine if we hadn't have done that, we'd be in a much worse situation. Given that the scheme, despite that opposition, I said, given that it has worked well, there hasn't been the impacts that the industry warned. It's now sensible to expand that scheme that's been working well for us. This is just a sensible, practical step. This will mean more security. It will mean a slightly higher cost for Australians as well, as I said, a cent per litre. But that is, I think, well worth it, given that we now know elevated risks of conflict.
The coalition, your parties, are also promising lower taxes and lower debt. So where would the $800 million to fund these concessional loans come from? Would you take it from money that Export Finance Australia already has put aside?
No, look, it comes out of what's called a national interest account, and there are some funds that this could potentially come from. But if needed, we don't want to take away from other priorities like critical minerals as well. If needed, there would be additional borrowing required. Again, this is something that's very sensible to do right now in this context. So look at the costs we're having to face now.
More debt might be worth it, you're arguing for this outcome.
Yeah, well, look, we have to spend sensibly, of course. What we need to do, because we need to spend money on things like this, we also need to cut back spending on wasteful spending. We've been very constructive and supported the government's efforts on the NDIS last week. It's been a bit belated, but we'll do what we can to work with them. But there are lots of other things. Why are we continuing to spend billions of dollars on hydrogen? It's clearly not working. Even Twiggy Forrest is moving away from hydrogen. Now, what I'd say, the other thing we're announcing today we haven't got onto is that we should support a new refinery. Mm. We also put in place, Angus Taylor put in place, a fuel security services payment, which has kept the two refineries we've got going. That, again, has also worked well. It's a separate scheme. Why don't we expand that to new refineries? That's what we're also pushing for today. I'd love Chris Bowen to get on board, but he seems to be saying no. He doesn't want a new refinery.
We'll have to come back to that another day because we are out of time. Matthew Canavan, thank you very much for speaking with AM this morning.
Thanks for the time.
Today marks 30 years since the worst mass shooting in modern Australian history. A memorial ceremony will be held at Port Arthur in Tasmania to remember the victims who died in the massacre. Annie Guest reports.
In the 30 years since her grandparents were killed, they've barely left Carly Martin's mind.
There's not a day where I don't think about them.
They owned a guest house on the picturesque Tasman Peninsula, where they became the gunman's first victims. A short drive away at Port Arthur, tourists enjoying a day out became the next victims.
The death toll continues to rise at Port Arthur, where a gunman...
Those killed included tourist workers at the site of the former Port Arthur penal colony and also customers at a petrol station.
Messages of sympathy are pouring in. The Queen, the latest to express her shock.
In total, 35 people were killed, 23 injured and many more emotionally wounded in the worst mass shooting in modern Australian history. Carly Martin describes how her family has tried to manage their grief.
Dad never wanted us to become more victims of that massacre. He didn't want it to define our lives. So we made sure we didn't. We got on with things and we went back to work and if anything, it had to make our lives better because we had to make those two people proud of what we went on and became.
7 weeks before her grandparents were killed, John Howard had become Prime Minister.
It's never wise to say that a single event changes a country because you really need the benefit of the passage of time and how a nation reacts and absorbs. I think what it did was it made a contribution to ending innocence.
John Howard's subsequent gun laws were spurred on by a handwritten letter from Walter Mikak, whose wife and two young daughters were among the victims. He's since spent decades advocating for violence prevention and trauma support, but today will be more private.
For me, it'll be a quiet day. I'm planning on going away, hopefully doing a nice long walk somewhere peaceful.
His girls, Alana and Madeline, were 3 and 6 years old.
Just reflecting on all the what-ifs and what the might-have-beens that we could have experienced over those 30 years.
Others will gather for a service at the Memorial Garden at Port Arthur, where the gunman's name isn't acknowledged. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, describes the terrible, indiscriminate cruelty as beyond understanding. In a statement, Mr. Albanese says, "Our hearts go out to everyone who has lived with decades of loss and every survivor and loved one who's no longer with us, but was shadowed by an inconsolable grief for the rest of their days.
Annie Guest there. ABC journalist Selena Edmonds was a reporter in our Hobart newsroom when the Port Arthur massacre occurred. She presented the 7pm news bulletin that evening, which went live across the country. I spoke to her about that day and its aftermath. Selena, what do you remember about reporting on the Port Arthur massacre 30 years ago?
It's one of those days that I remember vividly. Sundays were ordinarily very quiet in the Hobart newsroom, but I was the court reporter and filling in for the weekend newsreader that day. And the newsroom has windows that look out onto Liverpool Street and the road that goes up to the Tasman Bridge. And first there was one police car and then another, sirens blaring, and you jump on the phone. And the initial phone calls to police and ambulance, it started off as, you know, there's an incident at Port Arthur, then oh, we believe people have been shot, then five people, seven people. And it's a really difficult area in terms of communication, Port Arthur, because it's just over an hour from Hobart. And by the time the 7pm news, though, went to air, just a few hours later, because this had happened in the afternoon, it was confirmed that 25 people were dead and many more injured. So it wasn't over that day. And the truly dreadful reality about the massacre and the tragedy of that event was then revealed over the days to come.
As you say, there's that moment that day, realising that it's not over. And of course, the trauma as well goes on for weeks, months, years afterwards. In the immediate aftermath, tell me what that was like and what you learned about how it affected people in Tasmania.
Those following days were just extremely difficult for the victims, the families, the survivors, the first responders, the hospital staff, the doctors, the nurses, those people. The hospital became a real focal point. And I just remember a media conference with one of the doctors describing the injuries being more like what they see in a war zone and how challenging that was. There was shock, real shock. How could this happen in such a remote and beautiful place? And I remember the Premier, Tony Rundle, said that all Tasmanians would be sick at heart. And it was the perfect phrase to describe how Tasmanians truly felt about what had deeply impacted them.
What place does it have in the consciousness of Tasmania today, or even of Australia today?
I think it has a very significant place, sadly, for Tasmanians, for Australians. I think the events at Bondi last year brought that home. I think it's when you see an event like this play out and the many, many hundreds, if not thousands, of people that are impacted when you have 35 dead and 23 injured. And, of course, the legacy of gun control in Australia and the like came from that, as further discussed when there's any kind of incident such as what we saw last year. But I think it will always be something that personally for me was a story that was so immense and shaped the kind of journalist that I was as a 25-year-old and have continued to be over the last 30 years. And for, I think today, about all of those people that had to pick up their lives after such an unimaginable tragedy and then continue on. And it can't help but impact you in an incredible way, devastating way. Because if it didn't, we would that would be a tragedy in itself.
ABC reporter Selena Edmonds. And that's AM for today. Thank you for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Donald Trump had taken his seat at the White House Correspondents' Dinner not long before a 31-year-old tried to burst in, armed with guns and knives. Today we speak to Missy Ryan, staff writer at The Atlantic, who was in the room, about the security failings and Trump's response. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.